सहनाभवतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ सो इन् दिस् क्लास् वी विल् कण्टिन्यू the discussion we had yesterday. From this afternoon, I would like to talk about the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This text we have been following for the last few days is Drig Drishya Viveka. Now, this discrimination, separation between the seer and the seen is a very scientific method. The whole of science is only based upon this system. What does a scientist do? He becomes an impartial observer, isn't it? Then only he can really observe. Observe means to find out the nature. He finds a pattern, and that is how he classifies. First he gathers the data, then he classifies it, then he derives certain conclusions based upon which predictions can be made. Now that's a science. A scientist is one, not merely a technician. Many technicians call themselves scientists. They are not scientists. They are merely mechanical workers. Now, a true scientist is one who detaches himself from his old habits and tries to observe things properly. This is very, very useful for us in our day-to-day life. If we do not, then we have to pay £100 for our in the Harley Street. You know, what does a psychologist do? He just observes us. But he can come to the right conclusions because he is not attached to us. He is only attached to the money we are going to pay. So he is very careful to observe, and he doesn't do anything new. He simply says that these are some of the ideas which are obscuring your true vision. He doesn't make a new man. He merely brings us back to our original state. So that is spiritual practice also. What is the first thing? We have to detach ourselves, not become one with our ideas or thoughts. The highest such a detachment is the detachment from the body. But that doesn't mean we have to neglect the body or commit suicide. We should not say, I am the body. We have to say, I have a body. Do whatever you like. You enjoy thoroughly. In fact, you will enjoy better if you have that kind of attitude. Because then you accept in its totality. What's our problem? We only accept truth partially, not in its totality. Now, if you can accept the truth of the world in totality, then you will develop great detachment. Why? What is the nature of the world?
Changing.
Not only changing, it consists of dualities. You see, if you are happy, then what do you expect? I will always be happy like this. But that doesn't happen. After some time, you will become necessarily unhappy. That is part of the life, part of nature. That is why it is called dvandva. Sitoshna sukha dukkheshu. Mana, apamana, jaya, apajaya. It's part of life. Somehow we know it intellectually, but we never accept them. Some understanding is there, but acceptance is not there. In spiritual life, these two must be integrated. Understanding plus acceptance. And modify the behavior according to that understanding. That is why the Lord says, if anyone is devoted to me, I grant him buddhi yoga. Buddhi yogam dadamyaham. What is buddhi yoga?
Understanding
we already have. Who doesn't know death comes? Who doesn't know death comes at any time it likes? Is it not? Don't we have that understanding? But we don't, we lack one thing. What is it? Acceptance. We have understanding, we don't have acceptance. It is acceptance that is lacking. We are prepared to accept one thing, that which is convenient, we are ready to accept. But that which is inconvenient, that's we are not able to accept. Swami Vivekananda made wonderful observation. Happiness comes with a crown of misery on its head. So we are very prepared to accept the happiness, not the misery. But it goes along with these two, they are called twin brothers. They always are together, you know, not ordinary twin brothers. Siamese twin brothers. If you take one, the other also has to be taken. So that comes only through spiritual practice. Actually, spiritual practice doesn't change anything. One doesn't grow two horns because of spiritual practice. Yeah, even hair also doesn't grow. If you practice too much spiritual practice, there is a danger of hair falling off, not growing.
Is there any difference between acceptance and forbearance, or they two separate things? Or?
Forbearance is an action. Mm-hmm. Acceptance is an intellectual outlook. Yes, I accept it. After that, forbearance comes. In fact, without acceptance, the word forbearance is meaningless. So what we cannot avoid, we have to bear so many things in this world. In fact, 99% of time we are only forbearing. Because how many times we are able to get things? Not only, even when you get things, you are only bearing it, you know? Nice first class passenger too. I am bearing it even now.
That's not the assumption you ate anything.
You see? Long time I am going to bear it. But that is actually forbearing, it is not bearing. You know why?
Yeah.
If you analyze the fact, we want to enjoy the sensation of enjoyment, but we don't want it to stick there like a heavy burden. If it in 5 minutes it can be like that, digested, and if we are ready for another, how wonderful it will be.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this is the payment we have to pay. For this much of happiness, I have to bear it for hours together.
Mm-hmm.
That we do not usually accept. What happens when we take to spiritual life, things do not change. You must always notice it. The world doesn't change. The same sun rises from morning to day after day, same sun, same food, same environment, same mosquitoes, everything same. But what happens? A new outlook comes. That makes all the difference in the world. When we accept something, life becomes marvelous. But it doesn't stop there. Forbearance is not meant just to carry on life. Forbearance is an instrument on the way to something much higher. And for that, we have to make special spiritual practices. That is why most of us, we know of course, but we do not pay attention to it. There are certain disciplines they are not spiritual disciplines. They are preparations for spiritual disciplines. In fact, all the sadhana chatushtraya sampatti are only what?
Preparations.
Then only the teacher will come and tell, now your instrument is ready, let us start the journey. Then he will give you, this is how you will have to meditate from now onwards. Very often, I compare meditation to simulation. It's a very useful analogy. You know simulation? A flight simulator, Microsoft flight simulator. It's a very useful example. So what instead of you are going into the actual plane and damaging it, what do? You sit and everything that you are supposed to do in the real plane, you are doing it. You get the point? So if you do enough number of times, then your nerves, your thinking, everything becomes automated. So many types of simulators are there. Even I think car driving, there is a simulator like that. And now, the psychologists are devising certain computer programs simulators so that they can help people with phobias. You know phobias?
Mm.
Earthworm phobia and many devotees suffer from Swami phobia in both senses. Understand? Both senses?
Oh, yes.
Swami means husband. Both senses. Now, they are developing, you know, some woman has got what is called cockroach phobia, earthworm phobia, dry leaf phobia, you name it, it is there.
Mm-hmm.
Agoraphobia, mm-hmm. Claustrophobia, so many phobias are there. Now what they do, a kind of machine they developed, virtual, is the computer simulation, it's possible. So slowly, suppose somebody has got earthworm phobia. They know intellectually, earthworm doesn't do any harm, but somehow they developed it. So slowly, they put that earthworm moving like that. And he is going on talking and asking her, him or her, to express, oh, I have this phobia. He is going now looking. Somehow the mind accepts very near. Then slowly he will ask her to go near to that and touch it. It is just an artificial one. Go on touching it. So when this is sufficiently practiced, then he will bring an actual earthworm and slowly persons will get rid of it. Yes. This is the exact simulation we are supposed to do. This is called in Sanskrit language upasana. All upasanas are like that. Now these upasanas consist of several factors, but I will only mention two factors. One, our normal situation, and second, where we are going to reach, our destination, our goal. Now, but we are now here, so we have to slowly remove all the impediments that we have. So how do we overcome that? Let us take an example. Suppose there is a person who loses temper very, very quickly. Now that's a great impediment. It snaps energy, time, brings bad reaction in others. No one is going to be spiritual without removing these impediments. That's not possible. Because saintliness means the higher the vision, because vision is knowledge. Knowledge brings simultaneously corresponding changes in the behavior. If there is knowledge, knowledge brings about change in the behavior. But if we want to have that knowledge, we have to change the behavior so that it facilitates the manifestation of that knowledge. Now, this is where upasanas work out. How does it work out? You know, you take one example. Matru Devo Bhava, Pitru Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava, Atidhi Devo Bhava. You heard about it? Let your mother be God. Let your father be God. Let your teacher be God. Let any guest, means by implication, everybody. Now you look at the krama. Who is the nearest to us? Mother. Not even father, because 9 months we are in the womb of the mother. We hear the mother's voice and we feel the emotions of the mother. Mother is the nearest. We are nothing but 99% our mother only, body and mind, everything. That is why let our mother be a God. But it is easy to think mother is God. But father, the next comes who? Father. That is also easy. But it is slightly, he is distant. We recognize him only a little bit later. And if he is absent for 6 months, it will take a few hours for the child to recognize. See? But the mother is instinctual. The child will never forget. You know, in the penguins, there are 500,000 penguins. Every penguin practically has a chick. The mother recognizes the chick. The chick recognizes, even though everybody is, you know, is a cacophony. The cacophony is always tied in the asterisk, somewhere to the tree. Don't seem to ever enjoy the asterisk. Yeah, you remember? Cacophonics, always tied. Whenever they have a feast, he is tied because he says, I will now sing for you. Put him there. So, this cacophonics means what? So much of noise. How does the mother recognize the chick and the chick recognize the mother? There is a bond. But for father, it's because he's a bit distant, he can forget later on, of course, by association we recognize. So even further is teacher, because the teacher-student relationship comes when? Maybe after 4 years, 5 years only it comes. See, consider as God. Then atithi means what? Anybody whom we encounter in life suddenly for a short time is the atithi. So you see, gradually enlarging our vision of divinity. If we can make really see our mother as divine, then it is easier to look upon father as divine. I am of course talking about ideal mother and father. If you hear all these stories nowadays, then you will never be able to consider anybody as a divine, including mother and father. You understand? I am taking ideal situation. Normally, parents love, it is instinctual. The children also depend upon the parents. So, this is how we are slowly trying to see God in more and more and more people, those who are at a distance. Now, let us take one of the examples, Guru. Without any contradiction, every religion practically, including Buddhism, it emphasizes reverence to the guru, to the teacher. Now many modern people have a lot of objections to it. After all, he is a human being like you and me. He also eats. In fact, he eats first place. You know, whenever you, today, those who have eaten breakfast with me today, you understand, I was given first. Later on only if anything remains you will get. And then all attention is paid to me. So whether he is eating, everybody is glaring at me. What I have brought he is eating or not. Not taking into consideration that the Swami has to eat others also like that. So, when you look at this kind of behavior, How can you have reverence for the Guru? So many people, modern people, after all, what is there? He is also a human being, I am also a human being. Why you are want to pay attention to him? The point is, see, how much the Hinduism goes, Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo, Maheshwara. Yeah. And some devotees are having so much devotion, they catch hold of the feet and do not leave at all, even when the Swami is standing on a slippery carpet. I call it pulling the legs of the Swami. Literally, I have to go on balancing. Their devotion is so intense for a long time, and slowly they want to touch their forehead to the. Now, instead of bringing their forehead to the. You see my condition. Okay, this is a wonderful subject. Why so much of reverence? It is not Guru. Guru is a target for practicing reverence. Whatever be the Guru. Guru may not have so much knowledge. He may have even bad habits. He may not know more than me. But that is not the point. The point is, I want to become better. You know, when you are practicing archery, then it is not what the greatness of the target. In fact, the more you are becoming better at archery, the smaller and distant the target becomes. Yeah, there was a Zen master, and he was considered the supreme master of archery. So somebody asked, why are you called such a great Zen master? He said, I will only tell the secret to you. He said, you know what I do? First, I discharge my arrow and call it a target. So every time, absolutely on the target. So, the point is, we have to grow reverence. Now, there is a law. If somebody is great, naturally we will have reverence to that object. But we don't see that in common in the world. Very little greatness we see. But we have to learn how to reverence. Especially if you have to see God. Can you remain without reverencing God? Is it possible? But how will you see God? Because you develop your reverence, then you will see only God. This is called seeing God. God is already there. Every object, God is there. Where is not God? Even in a pillar, there is God. Remember? You understand what I am talking about? Prahlada's father asked, is there your God here? He says, where is not God? God is everywhere. This pillar itself is nothing but God, if you have the eyes to see. So, what Hinduism is teaching, it is not that God is hiding somewhere and waiting for you. It is that you have to open your eyes. Already the God is standing not only in front of you, you are that God. Usually, we don't reverence ourselves. But we have to reverence ourselves. There was an incident. Once Holy Mother was sitting and some devotee was passing by. Inadvertently, the feet of that person touched the dress of Holy Mother. Now that is considered as a great offense, especially if it is a disciple. Disciple's feet touches the teacher's body. Then immediately, Holy Mother took the dust of her own feet and then put it on the head of the disciple. Now if any one of us look at this person, she thinks She is God. You know, one woman and her husband, wife and husband, were separated, divorced. Somebody asked her, why did you divorce? She said, on religious grounds. Religious grounds? What is the religious grounds? He thinks he is God, I do not. Religious grounds. You see, Sri Ramakrishna, how much he reverenced himself. He used to show, this is where I practiced Nirvikalpa Samadhi. This is where I did tantric practices. Was he glorifying his own actions? No, because he knows that he is nothing. He has manifested through that body and mind, God has manifested. He is only out of his compassion revealing. Arjuna heard everything about Sri Krishna from Sri Krishna's own mouth. If you have studied Gita, 10th chapter, Vibhuti Yoga, what was he telling? Yadyat vibhuti matsatvam tat mamaivamsha tejuvamsha sambhavam. Wherever you see something extraordinary, that is a manifestation of my own glory. Now Arjuna heard all these things, but that is not only special things. Every manifestation is nothing but himself. Arjuna had faith. Then he says, "O Lord, I believe in what you say, but let me experience it." It's a wonderful chapter, 11th chapter. Then Krishna says, you cannot experience me, as I mentioned to you, through your ordinary eyes. You need special vision, knowledge vision. That's why he says, Divyam dadamite chakshuhu pashyame yogamaishwaram. I will give you divine eyes. Divine eyes behold only divinity. So that change has to come within us. Now you see the wonderful chapter. Arjuna, it is not Arjuna's nature to have divine eyes. They are borrowed divine eyes. And he could not keep them for long because he got frightened. That's a very wonderful chapter, though it is not connected with this subject. But it is nice to understand it. Why was he frightened? After all, it is a divine vision. Why was he frightened? Like Trailokya, Vaikunthanath Sanyal got frightened. Why did he get frightened?
He
was not ready. In what way was he not ready? You see, we only want to see the sweet side of divinity. Krishna playing nice flute. And at moonlit night, on the banks of the Yamuna, wonderful. But when Kali comes with a sword and dances in the crematorium, how does it look? Every shaking step destroys a world forever. Kali the mother, Swamiji is Kali the mother. But what is divinity? Everything is divinity. Srishti is divinity. Sthiti is divinity. Laya also is divinity, divine Leela. How can you have divinity and you see only one side of the divinity? Seeing one side is only humanity, Maya, not divinity. Seeing everything is called divinity. So Arjuna was not ready for that. That's why he prays. Just as he prayed, give me the vision, he said, take away your vision. And Krishna, of course, he understood. Otherwise, he will have heart attack. If his heart is attacked, whose chariot he is going to drive? He will be jobless. Unemployment. That is why he said, all right, I will bring you back. It's the most wonderful thing for us to contemplate. Just imagine, if we behold everything as divine, then only reverence will be there. Wherever you look, that is God. Now something wonderful happened. M visited Kamarpukur even during the lifetime of Sri Ramakrishna. And then he came back. And Sri Ramakrishna asked, so how did you find Kamarpukur? You know what he said? that every particle of dust in Kamarpako appeared to be shining with divine light. And he was prostrating everywhere. Because every place is manifesting the divinity of Ramakrishna. He enjoyed it so much. Actually, if you see Kamarpukur people, they themselves did never recognize it as Ramakrishna. Yeah, he said, our Gadai, no improvement at all. Even after 50 years, he is looking exactly the same. Yeah. So, but M had that wonderful vision. Then he enjoyed it. He wanted to go second time. Sri Ramakrishna said, no, because you digest what you have been given. So how did he get that experience? Because of? Sri Ramakrishna had given him that special enjoyment. You know, similar stories go on. Sri Krishna's this thing. Coming back to our subject, what is it? The divinity is already there. We don't reverence because we do not see divinity. We hate. It is worse. How can you hate divine? If you hate something, from the Vedantic point of view, whom are you hating?
Yourself.
Yourself, because it is God is even a remote entity, but you are the most immediate entity. If everything is God, you are also God. So if you hate something, whom are you hating? If you help someone, whom are you helping? That is the very essence of Karma Yoga. What is Karma Yoga? To see the divinity everywhere, to feel that I am not serving anybody, I am only serving my own self. This is the knowledge that will come as a natural consequence, but until it comes, we have to presume, we have to think. That is called simulation. So in meditation, these two factors. One, you simulate the being of divinity with the help of scripture. The scriptures tell you, you think of Krishna like that, think of Rama like this, think of Sri Ramakrishna like this. That's why every follower has been given a dhyana mantra. You know dhyana? Suppose you have to meditate on Vishnu. How will you meditate on Vishnu? You are asked to meditate on Vishnu. Do you know how to meditate on Vishnu? You don't know. That is why they give you step-by-step guidance. What is that guidance? That is called Dhyana Mantra. Shuklam Varadharam Vishnum Shashivarnam Chaturbhujam Prasannavadanam Dhyaye Sarva Vigno Shantaye Lakshmi Kantam Kamalanayanam. All this. If you have to meditate upon Sri Ramakrishna, then also you are given certain hints. What is that? Hridaya kamala mathe rajitam nirvikalpam sadasada kila bhedatitam ekasvarupam prakriti vikriti shunyam nityam anandamurtim vimala paramahamsam ramakrishnam bhajamaha. You cannot meditate otherwise. You know, you can imagine the form. Sri Ramakrishna is sitting like that. But what is that Sri Ramakrishna? This is only Nama Rupa. What is the real nature of Sri Ramakrishna? Hridaya Kamala Mathe Rajitam Nirvikalpam Sat Asat Akila Bheda Atitam. He is beyond all these dualities. He is always shining in the heart. Do we feel him? No, we don't. But we have to feel him. This is one side. We always focus only on this side, but we don't focus on the other simulation, which is even more important. That is real meditation. What is that simulation? Where are you now? What happened to you today? Did you shout at somebody? Did somebody shout at you? When someone shouted at you, what was your reaction? Just imagine, somebody shouted at you. What is our normal reaction? We shout back, or we get angry, or we suppress it. We may not even show, but we suppress it. And that doesn't mean that you don't have adverse reaction. It only means You are waiting for the proper opportunity. Yeah, it only means you are missing him. It only means you are missing him. You understand what I am talking about? No. Most of you don't understand. There is a joke, you know. The wife was very angry with her husband. So there was a photo of the husband. So she took some darts, you know, went on throwing at him. But all the darts are falling only here and there, not hitting the photograph. Meanwhile, the husband phoned, "What are you doing?" He said, "Missing you."
Thank you, Maharaj. Justice is done.
Yes.
We need it.
Yeah.
You see, how many reactions come into our mind and how many we suppress because of conditions. You can't shout at your boss. You can't perhaps shout at your colleagues. Every day, the moment there is a second person, there is going to be a conflict. But how are we going to resolve? If you suppress, it will come out someday and it will damage you. If you express, it may be even more dangerous. But what is the way? Sublimation. How can you sublimate? So the most wonderful example given is, see, a child is suckling the mother. At that time, the child is kicking the mother all over. Is she not?
Yep.
Then, will the mother get angry with the child? Because the mother knows, this is my child, it is a child, it doesn't know, and this is, it is, the child is not really kicking. That is its movement. But it can only do it with the legs, because it's busy otherwise. Now, is it possible for us to take things in that light? In fact, the whole Tirupati story starts like this only. I won't go into it now, but the thing is, we must sublimate, because you cannot go on getting justice in this world. That's not possible. So many things we have to forbear. In fact, life is meant to teach us how to forbear. But forbear means now I don't have opportunity, but when I get opportunity, I will take out. That's what you, America, there is an expression, you know, when two small children quarrel, one fellow gets the blow and he cannot retaliate. He says, you know, "My daddy can lick your daddy." Expression is, or you just wait until I grow up. And many times it happens also. They grow up and then they do something more damaging. What is the point? The point is, if we have reverence, then we can bear anything. So that is what we have to do. Willingly we submit ourselves to the Guru. So, but we have to simulate it in the mind. So, this was the example I was giving. Somebody has shouted or insulted, did something to you, you got very angry and you burst out, you reacted. That may be all right for worldly people, but it is not all right for spiritual people. That is not the normal behavior. We have to take the example of saints. How do they react? But we are not saints. What should we do? Simulate. How do it? Recollect this incident and then replay it exactly as it happened, and then sit back and say, is this the way I should have reacted? How would I like to react ideally? How would I like to react? Then you simulate. I will simply not get angry. I will be smiling. I will be talking very nicely. I will be talking very sweetly. Rehearse. Go on rehearsing. That is called simulation. When you do this, when actually an event takes place, then your reaction would not be as violent as it has been in this case. Do you get the point? We have to do that. If we don't do, simply go on doing japam. And after once you get up from the japam, and then you go out, then you are the same old person. That is why people start wondering, what is the good of your japam? I don't see any change in you. 50 years before you started your japam, you are exactly the same fellow. At every turn, if anything, you only became worse now. That is why people lose faith in religion. Religion is supposed to bring about transformation. And when they don't see, this is all bunk. The priests themselves, the ministers themselves, they don't change. Many spirit so-called religious teachers, they don't change. So long as they are on the platform, they are excellent teachers. But the moment they come down, they are horrible. Telugu, there is a story over there, you know, Harikatha man. He was giving Harikatha. And he was describing the evil nature of onion and the effects. His wife was also there in the audience. He was very fond of onion. Without onion, he will never put one rice mudde in his mouth. So his wife came to know for the first time how evil this onion was. That night she didn't put onion. And he wanted to eat. It was horrible food. He shouted, "Why did you not put onion?" She said, "I did not know it was so bad until I heard your Harikatha." He said, "If I ever see you in my Harikatha, I will tell you." You know, platform, everything is all right. Practical life. Not only me, all of you, you are listening. What is the change that happens to you? If it doesn't happen, it is not much effective. So we have to absorb at least a little. I'm not saying next day itself you will be transformed into a saint. But a little bit of improvement should happen. That is how we progress in spiritual life. This simulation has to take place in the mind. Now, incidentally, so this is not connected with spirituality. Even playing baseball, cricket, football, or any game for that matter, you can have this simulation. It's 90% skill is simulation, 10% is actual practice, they tell you. Which is what nowadays everybody has a psychologist. A football player has a psychologist. And a singer has a chess player has a psychologist. And everybody has a psychologist. They advise people. You make this. What is simulation? Deep meditation of what I am going to be. What is meditation? It is a simulation of what I am going to be in the future. That is why you visit barber shops, you will understand better what I am talking about. Modern barber shop. You know, barber, hairdresser shop. This is an exotic term. Barber shop means it is not hairdressing shop, beauty salon. Oh, wonderful world. You go there, they will have computers. You go there for hairdressing. They will take a photograph and they will put various dresses, hairdress, how you will look. When you say, "I want to be like this," then they will cut your hair like that. Have you seen that? I heard that they are like that. What is it? Because for me there is no problem. Anybody can dress my hair. Even I can do it myself.
Actually, Maharaj, they have an app for that. Linda has it on her iPod. Different hair, you can put on your own picture.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, see. Anyway, it's a good example. Meditation is what we would like to be in the future. Ekalavya. What was he doing? How did he learn archery? You know that?
Yeah.
His own guru refused him. How did he learn? Because you see, he simulated. What did he simulate? What did he simulate? He used to go bow down to the guru in the image he made, and as though the guru was teaching him and you, my child, you practice like this. Now exactly that's what Sri Ramakrishna also had done. There is a wonderful incident. Ramlal Dada, no, not Shibuda. Shibuda, Holy Mother's, Sri Ramakrishna's nephew. And he was talking with Mahapurusha Maharaj. And he was the priest of the Dakshineswar Kali temple. So the Shibuda was a wonderful person. Mother loved him. He was a very devotee, great devotee of Mother. He was the person who confronted Mother and said, "Who are you? Are you Mother Kali?" And she said, "Yes." She was forced to admit, "Yes." So he was telling to Mahapurusha Maharaj, "Maharaj, how can I describe the grace of the Divine Mother? Every day before going to bed, I pray to her. Mother, I may not be able to get up morning. There were no alarm clocks in those days. So will you please wake me up?" And he said, "Next morning, every day, Mother wakes, 'Hey, Shibu, get up. It is already the crow is crying. The crow crying. The crows, the chickens, and all these are starting, the birds are singing. So get up and take bath, and it is time for puja." And while doing puja, tell him, no, that will be come next. This will come first. He was telling how to do puja. Mahapurusha Maharaj was telling, "Shibu, is there any wonder? You are such a great devotee, and Sri Ramakrishna loved you. What wonder is there that the Divine Mother is teaching you herself? And who taught to Sri Ramakrishna?
Divine Mother.
It's only Divine Mother." When he was doing puja, as though she was so eager to accept his puja, see the wonder of it. She was trying to eat the food. Sri Ramakrishna, no, I have not yet uttered the mantra. Wait, the mantra is uttered. I see so many advanced spiritual people here. They come and sit. Before I do Brahmarpanam, they already start eating. What a devotion these people have. How was the Divine Mother teaching them? Because their complete reliance upon the Mother. If it happens to Sri Ramakrishna, will it happen only to Sri Ramakrishna? Not to any one of us? If we have that devotion, Mother will protect. Not only, it is a wrong thing to say she will protect, as though she is not protecting now. Do you know how many ways Mother protects us? Every time she comes and look, note down that I have protected you. This is the third time I protected you today. Please note down. Do you think she is expecting thanks for that? She is already doing it. But because we don't realize how many times she has saved us from dangers, how many times she has protected us in various ways, still protecting, will protect, but she is doing it invisibly. We have to take it for granted. Oh Mother, you are already protecting me. I can only express my gratefulness to you for doing these things. But coming back to our subject, what we were discussing here, samadhis, what is it? First thing, be a good observer. Go on observing it. After observing, if you wish, you get identified with any of the anger or whatever it is. But you are doing it now as a master, not as a slave. In any case, this observation is wonderful. Not only it is wonderful in spiritual life, it is wonderful in every activity of life. For example, you are reading a book. Sometimes you observe that so many pages have been turned, but what has gone inside? Nothing. But you observe, read a book, one page, and then you say, "What did I read? This is the best way of reading. What did I read? Did I understand? How do you summarize it?" this particular page, what are the important points, then move on to the next page. What did I understand from this page? What is the relationship between the past page and the next page? So what is the secret? You have to be an observer and at the same time a participant. Both, if you are only a participant, if you are a good participant, that's fine. But actually every concentrated practitioner, he simultaneously does these two things. That is how he keeps in memory. Oh, that page, I have got that point. This page, it is this point, you know, goes on doing it. Is it not useful? You are cooking. No, you have put lot of salt in payasam. And then you bring it to me. Maharaj, how is it? Now you made pranams and asking the question. How do I reply it? And you are also threatening to me. What did you, I did
excellent.
Hari, hari. They don't believe me. Do you see how important it is to be a bit of observant? So what happens? This gives, oh, that point I didn't understand. Let me try to understand it better. Then we save lot of time and our memory becomes better. Same thing, observe life. There's a beautiful book, has the whole Zen Buddhism is only based upon this simple principle, you know. Vipassana, observe, observe, observe. Nothing else, just go on watching. There is a wonderful novel has come. Was that Siddhartha? Hermann Hesse. The whole of Siddhartha, the book Siddhartha, is nothing but expressing this particular idea. There was one person, his name is Siddhartha, named after Gautama Buddha. He goes in search of enlightenment. He goes to so many things happens, a big issue. Beautiful book. Then ultimately he comes towards the end of his life, he comes to a river. And he recognized the boatman as a most enlightened person. So he asks, how did you get this enlightenment? He says that this river taught me. I only ply the boat. This river taught me everything. It gave me enlightenment. And you also observe the river by playing the boat. What is the secret? The secret is when the river is flowing, sometimes flowers are flowing, sometimes corpses are flowing, and when you are playing the boat, some good people get into it, some bad people get into it, good people also get out, bad people also get out, then new people come. Every day, every minute, things are changing. Then, what is the lesson you learn? There is only one thing which doesn't change. Who is that? No, no. Me. Me, the observer. Even the river is changing. But me, I am the observer. All life is meant only for one purpose. Who am I? You notice, if you observe, you notice, you, the observer, alone is the reality. Everything else comes and goes. It comes and disappears. Where was your husband until you got married? You know, about marriage, what a fine thing you observe. One husband observed very wonderfully. Me and my wife were very happy for 25 years until we met. what a wonderful observation. You know, we learn lessons only through observation. And until we observe, the lessons will be repeated. When we learn the lesson, what happens? Then you get involved. Doesn't matter. But now, you will not be caught. You see the point? Renunciation is not running away. You learn your lesson, then you can be a king, you can be a husband, you can be a wife, you can be anything, you can even fight in the most terrible war. That's what Krishna taught to Arjuna. You fight, people will be killed, they will be injured. You may be also killed, but you have to take it like anybody else, because this is life. But just be the observer, and everything will be, comes to you on a plate. The whole life is meant only for observation. When a scientist observes, not identifying with the materials of the experiment, then he comes to truth. What does he discover? Scientific truth. Until that time, it is only data. You see, you understand it better. So that is the same rule. Be the observer, be the observer, Sakshi. Then you understand, a time will come. Once you become Sakshi, then the next step will come. This is the essence of beginning meditation. You, we talk about samadhi and this and that and so many other things. It is only, we don't even understand intellectually what it really means. But we can, to some extent, understand this teaching that let us be the observers. You observe everything. You observe your breathing, for example. You will discover wonderful things. What wonderful thing? You observe the human nature. You know, there are persons. See, Vayudevata is free. Is it putting a restriction on you? How much you can breathe? I will only allow you to breathe this much only because you displease me. You can breathe, but how much? Why are you restricting yourself? That is all breathing that comes out. Why can't you? Breathe, fully you breathe. See how much it improves your posture, it improves your thinking, it improves your blood pressure, it improves your intelligence, and it is all free. Yes, it's all free. That is why the first, very first teaching for meditation, what is the first condition? No. Sit straight, asana. Then after asana, what comes? Pranayama. What is pranayama? Control the prana. How do you control the prana? You breathe in and out with full observation. And that is why they make lot of mathematical calculations, you know. 2, 8, 4, 4, 16, 8. Means breathe in to the count of 4. Retain it to the count of 16 and breathe out to the count of 8, etc. Why they have done this? Why can't you say simply breathe in and breathe out? Because by giving this number, you are forced to observe. And it has a lot of effects. There are so many mysteries which nobody will reveal to you by reading a book by Iyer or Swami Vivekananda. You don't get. They are mysteries. This particular type of regulation, they have an effect with different points of the body, like acupuncture. You know, the Westerners know about the why this particular point affects that particular nerve. So many mysteries are there. Pranayama is wonderful. So first asana, then pranayama, then pratyahara, then dharana, then only dhyana. And we are talking about dhyana. Even yama and niyama, we don't know what is yama and niyama. You see, one fellow, young boy, got initiated into Gayatri Mantra. Morning. Evening, he wanted to repeat. So he had some doubts whether he heard the mantra properly. He went to his father, repeated the mantra and said, "Father, is this all right?" Father said, "I remember having heard it long time back." See, how poor we are. We are talking about dhyana, yama and niyama. In that order, we have to go. Otherwise, you cannot maintain even asana. What happens? If you maintain the asana without yama and niyama.
In sleep.
Yeah.
You feel comfortable.
No, he can't maintain because the body becomes, mind is restless.
Oh.
Body becomes restless. Then it slumps or it something happens. Restlessness. Asana means, what is the meaning of asana? Steadfastness. And steadfastness can come only when the mind is steadfast, not otherwise. So, observation is the first point. Observe, observe, observe. Let the mind run as much as you want. This is another method. Just you observe the, let the mind go. Don't stop, don't control it. Let it do what it likes, but you observe. Surprisingly, when you start observing it, it starts also, my master is looking at me, I have to be careful what I am doing. 50% of its life is cut off. But that much is the beginning. So once you could separate, then this calmness, tranquility will come, because you understand that it is natural thing. Sometimes it is hot, sometimes it is cold, some people like you, some people dislike you. This is a most natural thing. So, what do we think? This is not natural thing. What is natural thing? Everybody will like me. That is the most natural thing. Isn't that? That's what the greatest Brahma, Bhranti, in the world. Yeah. The mother also doesn't like us most of the time. That is why if you don't sleep, she will put to bed and go on doing like this. My child, please sleep. Please sleep. Because I am tired. I want to be rid of you for some time. Wonderful it is. So, once we know that we have the power of observation, lots of good results will follow that. But that's not the aim of merely observing. The next step must follow. What is the next step?
Scripture.
Who am I? I know I am observing it. Now I know I am the observer. But what further? What is my real nature? Do I know who I am? Until this time, I am thinking I know who I am. Do you get the point? I am the body. I am a man. I am a woman. I am living in Cedar Rapids. I do this job. That is my CV. But the moment you separate, immediately you are confused. If I am not the body, if I am not the mind, then who am I? Observer means what? I am separate from the body and mind. Then who am I? How will you know? Because the world can never teach you who you are. And you don't know who you are. What is the way out? Then you take necessarily the help of the scriptures. It tells you what is your nature. This is upasana. So go on meditating upon it. Then slowly, slowly, the scripture is not making you something new. It is only revealing what you already are. And to understand this properly, the scripture also gives us to meditate, an object to meditate upon. Take the example. Say, Sri Ramakrishna used to meditate upon whom? Kali the mother. Forget about Divine Mother later on. Kali the mother, that image. What is that image? Have you seen Kali's image? What do you see? What do you see? But you know, the Shiva is lying, and upon his body, Kali is standing, and then her hair is flowing. She has how many hands? She has 4 hands. And what are those? What do the 4 hands consist of?
Severed head.
You know, there is a krama, right side to left side to. And right side to, one hand is like this, one hand is like this. This is called Abhaya. This is called Vara. On the left side, there is a sword and a severed head. That's why many people fear Mother Kali. But actually, women should be glad about it. That is the first feminine movement in the world. That is the only way to control your husbands. You understand? Okay. So what is the symbolism? It's everything is a symbol. Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara is a symbolism. What is the symbolism? What does Brahma do?
Creation.
What does Shiva do? What does Vishnu do? That's why, you see, Brahma doesn't have weapons. He has Saraswati. But Vishnu and Shiva have weapons. What is the weapons of Vishnu for?
Protection.
Because to maintain order, he needs, you know, law enforcement agency, police, and all these people, you know, paramedics, everything should be there. Yeah. What is this Garuda? Ambulance. Emergency ambulance. Yeah, you simply, Vishnu remembers 999, immediately comes and wherever there is accident or emergency, there the paramedic will be present. See, all these weapons are meant for sthiti. Sthiti needs two things. Protect and maintain the existing things and defend against inimical things. Both are necessary. That's what, you know, defensive system, offensive, there's one whole defensive system is there in your government, isn't it? That is necessary. Then Shiva is not the maintainer. Shiva is only the destroyer. That's why he has got Trishula. What does Trishula signify? He is called Tripurari. Tripurari. He is the destroyer of three cities or three gunas. What is your whole samsara? It is nothing but? Yes, what is sattva? Creation. What is rajas? Sthiti, maintenance. What is tamas? Destruction. So one, if you want to get out of samsara, then you will have to be destroyed. That is why Shiva has got. And also this Damaru, his Damaru. Damaru Dhvani. It indicates that your time is approaching. And then Trishula is there. And then why is Kailasa preserving the dead body for a long time? You see, you, after death, you know, this is, what is that? Mortuary. You have to, for some time, until decide what to do, has to be done. Come back to Mother Kali. All these three are represented in one Divine Mother. So, this right side is Brahma and
Vishnu.
Left side is Maheshwara. Shiva. That is the representation. This, the first thing is this one, Abhaya. Means what? Your life is all right. You don't need to fear. That's why it's called fearlessness. We have only ultimate fear, only is one. What is it? That we are going to be destroyed. Every other thing is only minor thing. Then even if after living, we want to live happily, we need lot of things. That is why this is what? Giving. That is why we always give like this, you know, like this. That is called Varada. But this is, we only focusing on this. But anything that is created has also go back to its maintenance. You know, hangers, maintenance hangers will be there. All the parts will be taken out and MOT. And then oiled and cleaned and changed and all those things and reassembled. So that will be done on the left hand side. The whole mother's this one. Kesha Jala. Kala. See, the whole, the very word itself is so symbolic. What is it? Is Kali. Kali means what?
About time.
Kali means Kala. Time, not timeless. Timelessness is Shiva. Srishti, Sthiti, Laya happens only in
time.
Now, if one meditates upon this symbolism, that means we accept this is the life process. If you accept, will you regret something, you know, like you when you buy an aeroplane ticket, you go and sit there. So long as you are traveling, you will not allow anybody to sit on your seat. You see, you cling to it with death-like tenacity. But the moment your destination is reached, so you are cursing everybody, why they are not moving forward. Have you noticed it?
Yes.
You are too eager to give up your seat and rush out.
Right.
Why? Because you have taken it for granted. This is only for a few short hours of journey. Once you have gone, you are not only not reluctant to give up, you are too eager to get out of that place.
Right.
A person who knows the secret of life, he is as eager when the time comes to get out of, he is not frightened. But we are like children, you know, like we are still clinging to the seat. Because of our ignorance. What is the ignorance? That we have not accepted the fact that the destination has come to an end, then we have to get out of the train. Yeah. So one fellow was just traveling in a train. He was a heavy sleeper. So he called conductor. And he said, Baba, I am a heavy sleeper, but my destination is reaching at 4 o'clock in the early in the morning. When the time comes, you please wake me up, otherwise I will be missing. So the conductor issued, no, I will do that. And the fellow happily went to sleep. And when he got up, it was 8 o'clock, and he was ending up somewhere. He got terribly annoyed and went to the conductor and then card holder. And I am going to kill you. He said, no, you don't need to kill me. I am about to kill myself. He said, why? Because you see, that fellow whom I tried to wake up and he didn't wake up, and I threw him out of the train. I heard he is coming after me. I better kill myself. Anyway, nice, much better joke is there. Wife, I will die. Husband, I too will die. Wife, why do you want to die? It is too much happiness, I can't bear. All right. So, why Thakur had become so enlightened after meditating upon the Divine Mother? Because he accepted the fact of, if there is creation, there would be also maintenance, there will be also this is the most natural thing in the world, and you cannot go beyond nature. Why not accept it? No, is it not happening? We all become old, or here we'll angangalitam palitam munda bhaja govinda. It is going to happen, and one day we have to die. If we don't accept the fact, you know what happens? We go on struggling how to stop this process. And do you think you will succeed?
No.
You will not succeed. And in the process you will only waste your time.
Mm-hmm.
Better be prepared for that. That is why this symbolism is. All the symbolisms are given only because of this. This is a type of meditation. If we can meditate upon this, then we overcome the fear of death. Then what happens? Mind becomes calm. When mind becomes calm, then we can do better things with that mind. That is one purpose of this symbolism, upasana, on all these symbolisms. Not to speak of spiritual progress, but even to live a happy, normal life, we need to accept the reality of the life. Then, unfortunately, we are not accepting. We are listening to Gita talks, we are listening to Vedantic talks, we are listening to everything. What I wanted to emphasize is, first be an observer. Then we discover so many defects within us. Oh, why am I angry with that person? Why am I unhappy with that person? Oh, I am jealous. Why am I jealous? Because that person got something which I think is better than what I have. So this is how we discover our own defects. Holy Mother's teaching. My child, if you want peace of mind, then stop finding fault with others. But that will not do. Because it's a wonderful thing, wonderful habit. To find fault with others is a wonderful habit. Improve that habit. Because if you don't know how to find fault with others, how will you try to find fault with it? It is the same technique. So, then start finding fault, and one thing happens, you know, when I start looking into my fault, then I say, "Arey, that same fault which I was looking in the other person, I have it also in a much improved version, latest version, updated version, more powerful version. How can I, without any shame, try to find fault with others? Because the other person has maybe much less." You see, how many wonderful things will come. The moment we start doing anything like that, we are really observing. How will you find fault? Because you are observing. How will you find fault with yourself? You are observing. The moment you observe, you are isolated. The moment you are isolated, fear comes. If I am not this, I don't know who I am. So far, so long, I am thinking I am this. At least some identity is there. Now I know this identity is gone. Then who am I? And you cannot remain like a person without visa. What happens if your passport is lost? Will you have peace of mind? Yeah. So the same thing happens in our mind. Then what am I? Who am I? When Ramana Maharshi is advising to people, find out who you are, stupid people, go on telling, oh, I am, who am I? What picture comes to his mind? Whatever CV he has, that is the only picture he says. Then he has to, if he is honest, he has to say, I am a stupid fellow, I am a foolish fellow, I am an idiot, I am a donkey. Because that's what he is. Is that what Ramana Maharshi is really asking?
No.
He is asking to find out. To find out, no, I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. That is the beginning process. Then who are you? Then the next things come. When it comes to a question of who are you, you can never find, because that is not in our experience. Then you will have to take the teachings of the scriptures and go on repeating those scriptures. It is only then, as a result of so many janmas, bahunam janmanamante vasudeva mam prapadyate, vasudeva sarvamiti, after so many lives. This is also one question that comes, why am I not progressing in spiritual life? So, how many janmas you are unspiritual? When did you start your spiritual life? And now you are expecting very, very fast, and you have Sri Ramakrishna's teachings for enforcing your argument. What did Sri Ramakrishna teach? Suppose a room is in darkness for 1,000,000 years. How much time will it take for it to get light? Yeah. You know what it is like? A fellow drinking in a pub is telling, usually only one glass will make me drunk. only one glass. Usually it is the 12th or 13th glass. Only one glass.
Oh.
But to come to that one glass, it takes time. That is why he says titiksha. Sahanam sarvadukkhanam apratikara purvakam chinta vilaparahitam titikshasa. Infinite patience we must have. That is why Sri Ramakrishna tells the story of those two yogis. Narada was going, and then, when am I going to see God? Oh, so for one fellow he says, one more life only. And he started weeping. The other fellow he says, as many leaves are there as in a tamarind tree. Oh, he starts dancing so soon. It's a wonderful parable. What is the meaning of that parable? The other person is prepared to wait any number of years. He is a bhakta. But he knows what is the end. What is the end? I am going to become sugar. But I don't want to become sugar. I want to enjoy sugar. So if God says, after so many births I am going to come, what a wonderful opportunity to enjoy the sugar before finally becoming sugar. That itself brings the grace of God instantaneously. So if you are impatient, then you know the result. You take more time to do anything if you are impatient. Have you not noticed that?
Yes.
So, I would wrap up what we have discussed today. What is it? If we want to progress any field of life, be scientific. What is to be scientific? First of all, to be an observer and really be observing, not identifying, not interpreting. We are never observers. In a way we are observers. We are what is called motivated observers. We interpret everything. Without observing, we don't get anything. But we are always colored. Put on colored specs and then observe. So don't put on any specs. Just remove. Just be an observer. Good or bad, whatever is there. Accept it as a fact. Then that itself is a great spiritual progress. Then we notice that we have more problems, defects within us than anybody outside. In fact, if we don't have a particular fault, we can never understand that fault in others. Do you know that truth?
Yes.
If I am not a thief, I will never recognize anyone as a thief. Do you see the point? Swami Vivekananda used to illustrate. Suppose at midnight, a stranger enters through the window. One man went to an ophthalmologist, and the ophthalmologist said to him, "My God, your vision is so horrible." The patient was shocked. "Doctor, even before examining, how did you find that I have such a bad vision?" He said, "The moment I saw you walking through the window, I knew So, a stranger enters into a room at midnight. If you ask the elder person, "Who is this?" then he says, "This is a thief." You ask a child, "Who is this?" the child will never say he is a thief, because he doesn't know what is called thieving. He will say, "He's a stranger. I don't know him." If I don't have that fault, I can never find the fault with others. That is a sure proof. Because how will you identify this is this? Do you get the point? So, observing as an observer gives a great benefit. That is the first benefit. It isolates us. It breaks our CV. Then what is the second thing? The moment we are passportless, we are very anxious to get a passport, then who am I? Then the only way is to take the help of the scriptures. Now the scriptures give two types of teaching. One teaching to accept ourselves as what we want to be. You are divine. But much before that, they will also give the method, what is called simulation. Simulation means practicing what we have to exhibit in our day-to-day life. As I give you the example, I should not get angry. So if I go on practicing certain scenario, in course of time, if that scenario happens, because I have practiced so much, then it becomes easier for me to improve myself. And that can be done through what you call meditation, which is simulation. Do that. Then after that, you take the help of the scriptures and find out who you are. You will not have immediate realization, but go on meditating until you know I am this from the scriptural statement. Often this scriptural teaching comes in the form of the teacher, guru. That is called mantropadesha. Or according to Jnana Marga, he will tell you tattvamasi. When does he tell tattvamasi? He will not tell in the very beginning. When does he tell? He will make you go through the whole of scripture. Sravana, manana, nididhyasana, in a general way. When the right time comes, then he will say, you read all those things, you know, you remember? Tattvam asi, you are that. And even then, a disciple may not be 100% sure. And he knows through faith, but he doesn't know through experience. So a time will come, that experience also will come. But for that, to do that, we must have faith. To create that faith, guru is an aid. That is why what the guru is not important, but how I look upon the guru, that is the secret of guru worship. You are not worshipping the body. The body is only just like an image. You know, every child knows the image you worship is a piece of metal or a piece of wood, isn't it? But is that what the worshipper is looking at? He is looking at that which represents, that picture, what that picture or an image represents. That is why it is called, it is a symbol, it is an icon. Nobody is worshipping a piece of metal. Everybody is worshipping what that suggests, what that idea comes. So the guru is such an ideal. If I can see God in the teacher, then I can extend it very easily to everything in course of time, wherever it is. Now I will illustrate very briefly this process, how it has taken place in the life of a closed, intimate devotee of Sri Ramakrishna. I am referring to Gopala's mother. She had a vision. Where did she have a vision?
In
her own home.
Yeah.
That was her private vision. For that you have to get information about the life. I am only briefly mentioning. Then, that is what exactly this book's teachings illustrate that. She had vision from her own heart. Then she came to Dakshineshwar. Then this image is going into Sri Ramakrishna. And it is coming out of Sri Ramakrishna. Again it is going. I means what you see here is what you see there is one and the same. That's what happened in the beginning. After a few days, what happened? It extended. In all the important devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, like Narendra Nath, Rakhal, etc. This image is going. First it said only Ramakrishna. That's why she got the name Gopala Irma, because she used to call Sri Ramakrishna as Gopala. And she also used to call her as mother. So Gopala's mother, meaning Sri Ramakrishna's spiritual mother. But that vision didn't stop there. it went on going inside, outside, Narendranath, then Rakhal, then Tarak, then we don't know the particular. Then, so not only Sri Ramakrishna, my Gopala is Naren, my Gopala is Rakhal, my Gopala is Tarak, etc., etc. The vision was incredible. Until, we don't know how many people, how many people Gopala entered into. And finally, when there was that chariot festival at Kamarhati, that day, this Gopala was present in the chariot, in the people who were witnessing the chariot festival, in the priests who were sitting on the chariot, in the image on the chariot, that means
everywhere.
With that, her vision was complete. Jatadhari Sadhu. First he was seeing only Rama in that image. Later on, he discarded the image. Why?
Because
so now he is able to see Rama
everywhere.
So this is, but at least let us start with one person whom, upon whom we can show reverence, not because he is revered, but because I choose to bestow reverence and love upon him. You see the difference? Otherwise you prove your reverence, then I will show my reverence. That is not the way. Whatever you are, I don't care. I have decided to revere you. So I only get the benefit. The poor guru may not get the benefit. I get the benefit. That is the secret of puja. You know, an image. You take food. I decide to offer this to you. Then what does that food become? Prasada. Then who gets benefit? I only get the benefit. So this is the secret of Murti Puja, any Murti. If anybody ridicules you, if you want, you can give this answer. It is not that the Murti is God, but I have chosen to look upon it as God. What is your headache? So this is the process. One day will come when we see the whole universe is nothing but Brahman. And that is the fact. You are not imagining it to be Brahman. It is Brahman. You don't see it. Now you are capable of seeing it. That is called spiritual progress. From afternoon, today evening onwards, we'll deal with the 13th chapter, which is a very interesting chapter. And only 3 sessions are there. Therefore, I can only give you the very essence. And in fact, that is enough actually for us to understand. With the help of what we are going to discuss, you can understand the 13th chapter more or less easily. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.